Blog Talk Radio.
Hey folks, welcome to Right from the Left Coast, and it looks like I got in. I finally got the right PIN number, and they were happy. So my name is Linda. I'm coming at you from Oceanside, California. It is, wow, it's a gorgeous day. It's beautiful. In the last two or three days, things have been absolutely, completely bonkers. So I'm not sure where I'm going to start, but I got to start with so much has been going on. I've got headlines. I've got Agenda 21. Everybody has sound, I hope, and I actually got in. I was by the skin of my teeth. They're asking us to put PIN numbers in again. It's becoming a real pain. So I first, before I went to set up the polls, because I worked the entire day yesterday at the polls, which was an experience by itself. Thanks, Bill. Everyone's got sound check going on. Basically, I can't even believe what's been going on, but prior on Monday to going to set up the poll, I was doing a quick rally for Mayor Jim Wood. He's running for supervisor. I don't know the outcome because God knows they haven't counted anything all the way yet. So, anywho, he was not there, but his wife was there holding signs, and I didn't recognize her because she changed her hair color, and so it was really, really interesting. Before I get into all that, and then my experience with the libtards at the polling place, not the voters, but the people I was working with, it's really cool, because my head will explode. We're also going to get into the guy that was swapped for the five evil ones. Yes, welcome Bill, Rod, Yo, and Nick, and Heron to the show. If anyone wants to post this on Facebook, please do. I did not have time. I got in, and I just barely got time to do this, get into the show today. So, I mean, we've got the guy that was swapped for the five evil ones out of Gitmo. We've got people speaking Arabic, and of course, Schmendrick in chief, the rat, you know, ass holiness, as Bill would say, smiling and nodding and having a good time with that. It's just absolutely disgusting. And then I've got tons of articles right here in River City, which is my nickname for Oceanside, of the Union Tribune on the connections of Agenda 21, and we will go forward and we will get into all of these things. And prior to, believe me, I've got that article, Rod. I may go through that one too. There's a ton of them. I'm inundated with them on that, the traitor, the deserter. So I want to do some scripture because it's really, really time to calm us down, as we know, just before we get started. And then I'll just take this one step at a time and we'll get through all the headlines and stuff. And then I'm about 7:30 you guys' time and 4:30 my time. We'll take calls and I'd love to hear from you guys. I did miss Bill's show. I had a chance on a very easy lull that we had yesterday, and my precinct inspector, the one who had never done this before, was playing video games half the time, and so he could care less if I had broadcast a show or not. Anyway, so I'm going to go with 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 19. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. But let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or an evildoer or as a meddler. Anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name. For it is time for judgment to begin at the household of God. And if it begins with us, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? And if the righteous is scarcely saved, what will become of the ungodly and the sinner? Therefore, let those who suffer according to God's will entrust their souls to a faithful Creator while doing good. And so one of the messages that my pastor, after we had done those lessons, had spoken about was that we are allowed to be discerning, but we cannot actually judge people. We can be judgmental of certain things, but we're not to judge people or, you know, in other words, hate the sinner. We can hate the sin. So those are hard lessons to learn because, you know, because we're human. And, you know, we get a little upset with some of these clowns. I usually just throw them up to his shoulders and say they're too big for me, and besides, they're your enemies, not mine. So anyway, I want to get to my last couple days. The Monday, there was all these – I live among complete socialist libtard nut jobs. Let's start with that part. So I'm at this rally, and they're handing me – propaganda for people complaining about, you know, they're not getting paid enough flipping hamburgers. They want higher minimum wages. Okay. So I read their stupid little pamphlet, and then I handed it back to her, and she says, oh, did you read it? And I said, yes, I did. And she says, you don't like it? And I says, no, I don't. And she didn't say anything. And then, you know, this goes on everywhere I go. I'm not kidding. So then as I'm standing there, there was the mayor's wife, and she's holding signs and everything, and she's talking, and then I'm looking up to the sky, right? And I'm watching these chemtrails again. I mean, this is like the second or third day in a row, and they're hitting it heavy, and they did it again today. And I pointed them out to her, and I said, oh, they're spraying, they're doing the chemtrails again, and it's getting worse. And she says, what are you talking about? And I said, look up in the sky. And she says, oh. And I said, she says, well, what is that? And I says, those are chemtrails. And she says, well, what are they spraying? And I said, aluminum. I said, barium, and probably chloride and God knows what else. And she says, this is how stupid these people are. She says, well, what are they trying to do? Kill bugs? And I said, no, honey, they're trying to kill us. And she says, oh, I didn't even notice that ever before. And I'm like, you know what? I didn't say it out loud, but in my mind I'm going, you know what? I wonder if Christ came out of the clouds if she'd missed that too. I mean, this is what I'm up against. I cannot believe these people. Oh, my God. So then I go make sure that the polls are set up for the night before, and that's good. And then I get to the polls, and, of course, I'm surrounded by probably, I'd say, one-tenth more Democrats than Republicans in the area, although I think more Republicans showed up just by a little bit, and we only had like 18-20% turnout. It was one of the worst turnouts we've ever had on a primary, so that tells you something. And then the poor little libtard who was the precinct inspector, which I won't give names, was about as useful as, you know, what's on a bore. I mean, he was just absolutely useless. All the other two of us did the most of the work, so it's like just absolutely insane. And then we were talking about the write-in candidates, and because people were asking, you know, can we write people in? And I said, yeah. And they actually had lists of write-in candidates, and you can make up your own and all these things. So I told him what I did on my mail-in ballot, and he says, well, which ones? And I said, I actually said, okay, under Rocky Chavez, he's an assemblyman for the state of California. This guy ran against, last time he ran against Sherry Hodges, whom I was trying to, I phone banked for. I tried to help get her elected, and she lost. All the conservatives that I like are losing hand and foot, and we'll get into the good old governor's race in a second. It's insane. So, and there was nobody running against Rocky Chavez, and nobody was running against Bill Gore, who's the sheriff, and he's an unconstitutional piece of garbage. He was in the Ruby Ridge deal when he was in the FBI. This is what a lame brain he is. He's like the least constitutional sheriff on the planet. And so all these people were running unopposed. So there was nobody, except you could write in candidates that you wanted. So under Chavez, who's all for illegal amnesty and God knows what else, he's a rhino, I wrote in Mickey Mouse, and then I went for, as far as Bill Gore went, the sheriff, there was no one running, so I wrote in the write-in candidate, and I said, as an alternative, I would like to vote for Vladimir Lenin. So I told this story to this conehead who's sitting next to me, and he goes, who's that? And I said, you do not know who Vladimir Lenin was? I said, the Bolshevik who started the revolution in Russia back in Stalin's time and preceded him. And he says, oh, okay. That was one of my first clues. Then the precinct, what do they call them? They're troubleshooters. They're like little supervisors, and they run around and they try to help us, right? So the last time he came in was towards the end of the day, and there wasn't very many people, and it was getting ready to close, and we weren't going to get hammered. And so anyway, he's going on and on and on about he was saying some garbage about, you know, that he doesn't pay attention to the political scene anymore in the news because it depresses him, and now he's happier. And I thought, oh, okay. And then he goes on to spout, you know, all this stuff about because he believes that there's a huge difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, and I knew where this was going, so I didn't even bother to say anything because I figured that he would be on the socialist bandwagon without even trying. So he said he was upset, I guess, with Fox News stating that. He says, yeah, and he says they were spinning what was it? There was a clip of idiot giving a speech talking about, remember that one where he was out there saying, you didn't build that line? Well, there was an entire speech, and I think that there were people like Glenn Beck and Fox News who actually played those in their entirety. So there was nothing taken out of context like this idiot was saying. And I just looked at him, and I thought, I'm not going to say this because it'll only get me in trouble, kind of. And I just didn't want the end of the day to go badly, because had I had a chance to talk to him privately, I would have said, oh, really? What do you know about your friend Barry, you know, Satoru from Indonesia, and his grandparents and his parents on both sides, and his associations and the people who have surrounded him his whole life and his actions? They mean nothing to you. I mean, this is what if I were going to go into a complete World War III with this guy, that's what I would have said. I mean, it's like, you know, okay. Yeah, Indonesian dog eater, absolutely. That was from our friend Johnny from Texas, and Mikey used to call him Hollywood as a handle. But anyway, so that's how my days went. And then, of course, I'm hearing about the release of these five people and the swap for this clown who is obviously a deserter and possibly a traitor. So I'm going to try to find that one. Let me go in here real quick. I know he sent me one. This is, okay. Captured U.S. soldier has joined our cause, say Taliban. This is the one from our friend Rod Luke. So I'm going to try to get this little piece here. A Taliban commander in Paktika said the 24-year-old Bergdahl, that's his name. I usually try not to. I try to avoid bad people's names. Had converted to Islam. The only known American soldier in Taliban captivity is training fighters in bomb making and ambush, according to one of his captors and the Afghan intelligence agents working to free him. Private Bo Bergdahl disappeared from an American military base in southeastern Afghani in June of 2009. Last week, the Sunday Times interviewed one of his captors, shedding light on a case that has baffled U.S. military officials. Yeah, well, they're not too bright either, since he's purged all of the decent ones. A Taliban deputy district commander in Paktika province said the 24-year-old American had converted to Islam in the months after his capture. He said Bergdahl from Idaho's Sun Valley had trained Taliban fighters in bomb-making and ambushing convoys. There's a quote. When I saw him for the second time, he had totally changed. He had a beard, and he treated all of us very respectfully. He seemed very relaxed in our company. He was no longer scared, said the commander, who called himself Haji Nadim. That was just one article. They go on and on and on. So, yeah, that was the other one that came to mind was, oh, yeah, ignorance is bliss. That was the one I was going to retort to him. Yeah, I mean, it's just, oh, yeah, Obama thinks this guy's a hero because Obama is a Muslim. Obama is evil. Come on, guys. How much more evidence does anybody on this planet need? You know, when you get Mark Levin talking last night, I mean, this was after I was dead tired and hadn't poured my first glass of wine. Believe me, I needed it. Mark Levin is saying that we have had a slow but steady and very certain coup in this country. And those are strong words, folks, especially coming from Mark Levin. I mean, he was just on fire. He about all of these situations. And I hope that, in fact, today on Hannity's show, as I was cruising around and trying to listen to everything and listen to him, he had several people. He had Brigitte Gabriel on. He had several people on. He was talking about Waleed Shobat's article. And the all of these people are nailing it. And they kept on it about this captured release and all the rest of this stuff with these Taliban clowns. And I said, this time, Hannity, I'm with you. You stay on this and you hammer this. And even, who was it? Chris Matthews was like excoriating this whole deal. Man, when you got the hard left coming after you, you know you're on the wrong side of history. This is horrible. I'm going to switch gears. We're going to go back to this story, but I want to go to what I have in my paper because this has been bugging me for the whole week. This was Monday, June 2nd. This we're going to go kind of backwards in time. Yeah, they're absolutely, Bill. I know. We've got guys down here. As you know, Jeff Schwilk has been rallying. They've been down there on the border. They've been writing to people. They've been pounding on people's doors, calling everybody, trying to get Tamarisi, I think his name. Anyway, the sweet Marine down there that's been, yeah, I know, his mom's been on TV. I agree. I mean, it's crazy. It's upside down world is what it is. It's an upside down world. This one is my headline, EPA seeks 30% emissions cut. Obama administration to unveil proposal to reduce carbon pollution from power plants. And also, you mean the tiny amount of power plants that are left after you have closed several hundred of them, or how many has been gone away? This is Washington Compost. The Environmental Protection Agency will propose regulation today that will cut carbon dioxide emissions from, this is disgusting, from existing power plants 30% from 2005 levels by 2030. I want you guys to remember that number, 30, because I'm going to be saying it in a lot of this stuff today, because this isn't the only article that addresses this. And all of you folks who know about Agenda 21 and know the general plans and the 2030 and 2050 are going to understand this. 2005 levels by 2030, according to individuals who have been briefed on the plan and asked for anonymity because it had not been formally announced. The draft rule would give states and utilities four options, oh, how nice of them, of how to meet the new standard, with different emphasis on energy efficiency, shifting from coal to natural gas, but they won't let us go in to get our natural stuff. Oh, no, let's not do that, miserable freaks. Investing in renewable energy and discounts to encourage consumers to move to off-peak hours. This is what goes on. A coal-fired plant generates power in Maryland. The average U.S. coal plant is 42 years old, according to the EPA. I don't believe a word they say. Some were built when Dwight D. Eisenhower was president. That's possible. That doesn't mean we don't need this coal or anything else that we need. The rule represents one of the most significant steps the federal government has ever taken to curb the nation's greenhouse gas emissions. Can you imagine this? Oh, no, absolutely I can imagine it. And you don't need to cut greenhouse gas emissions, you fools, which are linked to climate change. Another lie. If this isn't the biggest dang lie I've ever heard since Hitler said it's all the Jews' fault, I'd like to know. I'm going to go on with this article. They're killing me here. The draft is sure to spark a major political and legal battle. It damn well better spark a political and legal battle, you miserable socialists. Conscious of that, Barry called a group of Senate and House Democrats on Sunday. Of course he's going to go to the Dems. Afternoon to thank them for their support in advance of the proposed rule. How nice. Okay, let's keep that 2030 in mind, shall we? Okay. Here we go. This is the second article, and this was a different day. Same day, but on a different page. This was the local part. The other was the headlines. And we'll go backwards in some of this. I think that was, May 28th. Same thing. They won't impeach him. Heron, he's black. But I'll tell you what I'd like to see. In fact, you can guess what I'd like to see. Take him out feet first. And I know I'm going to get in trouble for that, but I don't care anymore. And then I have a reason to buy champagne and a whole hell of a lot of it. Okay, this next one, this is in Escondido, which is in my neck of the woods here in North County. It says, sprinters, this is a sprinter is the rail line, the little rail line. Mall stop is way down the line. In other words, down, talking about how long down the road. Okay, remember this thing. Extension to Westfield North County would be year 2030 at the soonest. Oh, where did I see 2030? Oh, I saw 2030 on EPA with Gina McCarthy, the evil one. Yes, I did. Question, what is the status of the sprinter extension to the Westfield North County Mall in Escondido? When is the new station expected to open? Also, does the North County Transit District have long-term plans to extend the sprinter to downtown San Diego and have it connect with the trolley? If you could answer these questions, I would appreciate it. Thanks. It was a resident in Escondido. The answer is, extending the Sprinter, a light rail passenger service, to Westfield North County Mall in Escondido is a long-range project that won't open to the public until 2030. Imagine that. At the earliest, the trains go as far as east as Escondido Transit Center, about 5 miles north of the regional shopping center, and about a mile west of the city's downtown. The 22-mile line opened in 2008 with stops in Escondido, San Marcos Vista, and Oceanside. Lovely. It's popular with North County College and high school students who commute to class, but it has yet to reach initial ridership goals. Oh, do you know why? It's inconvenient. It probably costs too much, and nobody rides it. So believe me, I look at it, and there's maybe on these rail things, there's maybe 8 to 10 people, and there's like 50 seats or better. Cost estimates place the Sprinter extension, including the opening of a station near the mall. Listen to this figure, $171 million. It's part of, okay, here we go. It's part of a $1 billion package of Sprinter improvements, including the construction of a second track from Oceanside to Candido in the region. Let's see, let me find the rest of it. Commute, okay, in the region, come on. Long-term transportation blueprint. Yes, this is a long-term transportation blueprint. Just go to Sandag. They'll tell you all about it. Transportation leaders will have to find money for these projects, neither of which is funded or included on any near-term priority list. Stretching the Sprinter south to the mall and adding second track along the main line are part of, well, here we go, are part of the region's 2050 regional transportation plan. Didn't I tell you? A to-do list for a mass transit and freeway projects. Mm-hmm. A third Sprinter project, one that would extend the line to East Escondido for $96 million, resides on an even lower priority wish list, according to Sandag. What did I tell you? There are no plans to extend the Sprinter even further south to connect with downtown San Diego trolley. Planners considered light rail along North County's I-15 in the 90s, but rejected the idea due to high cost and low ridership projections. It's gonna be the same story. Idiots. And I actually did the Mr. Commute thing, and I lambasted him and talked about Agenda 21. They had a place for us to do that, and I let them have it. In June, a new high-frequency bus line is set to open between Escondido and downtown San Diego, making use of the recently completed I-15 express lanes. Isn't that special? Okay, here we go into Oceanside. I want to go into Oceanside, and then I'm going to go back to that story, and I'm going to ask for calls. Okay. City studies possible coast highway revamp, and this is Oceanside. Oceanside wants to fill in details of plan to transform thoroughfare. I hate these people. Believe me, I've seen their vision plans. Coast Highway and Oceanside is a busy thoroughfare, but city leaders and business owners say, well, there's only one or two business owners, trust me, because there's about 15 or 20 who hate this whole damn thing. They want the street to be a place where people will walk along and visit rather than speed by in cars, which is horse feathers. All I've seen is it's getting worse, said John Daly, who has owned the Cafe 101 on Coast Highway for over 28 years. It doesn't work the way it is. He's one of these libtards. City officials are conducting a study to improve the 3-mile corridor, one of the city's main north-south arteries that stretches from San Luis Rey River to the Buena Vista Lagoon, it features a mishmash of used car dealerships, restaurants, aging motels, and empty storefronts, and they're going to remain empty. It doesn't matter what you do, you clowns. The Coast Highway Corridor Study will look at various alternatives to realize an ambitious Coast Highway Vision Plan adopted by the City Council. And I think that was... they're lying. I swear. Highway, is it 5? Okay. They adopted in 2009. The plan calls for a pedestrian-friendly side boulevard with wide sidewalks. Oh, and they're huge. Bicycle lanes, shops, and restaurants. This is what they're doing. They haven't put the year in there, but I know this is 2030 because that's exactly what they were talking about at those vision meetings. So this is what I deal with. I want to read this really quickly because this is the one I talked about a week ago, either on my show or Terry. I can't remember which show it was, but I want to get to this because this is going to tie it all together with the Agenda 21. Okay. Obama's plan to equalize educational opportunities will render state governments obsolete. So bye-bye, 10th Amendment. President Obama's efforts to push regional equity taxation, listen to this, will control property taxes, limit the development of greed-filled suburban communities, that sounds like Maurice Strong to me, render state governments obsolete, undercut state autonomy in education, oh yeah, and create an environment where states are forced to accept federal educational policies. This is all Common Core. All requirements for successful redistribution of wealth. Nations that redistribute wealth in this manner have destroyed their economies and the educational systems of those nations, leaving poverty and destruction in their wake. Taxation limits a person's right to private property, a prerequisite for economic development, the ownership thereof. Regional equity, state equalization, regional tax base sharing, and smart growth are terms which stand for a federal process by which tax dollars will be taken community that earn them and use them to equalize services, including educational opportunities in neighboring districts. Myron Orfield wrote The Region and Taxation, School Finance, Cities, and the Hope for Regional Reform for Rutgers, which explains that school districts' traditional reliance on local property taxes has been effectively lessened by this state equalization. Once people surrender their property rights, protecting educational opportunities becomes more difficult. Meanwhile, legislators who support redistribution policies will continue enjoying their own estates. Yeah, when their property taxes increase, they will vote themselves a pay raise supported by more tax increases for the public. Ugh, ad infinitum. Community organizer and friend of Obama, Mike Kruglick, developed Building One America. Oh, isn't that sound special? God, if that doesn't sound like the UN, I don't know what does. Which recommends regional tax base sharing as a method to take money from wealth-laden greedy suburbs and schools and redistribute those dollars to nearby cities and less well-off inner-ring suburbs. According to Stanley Kurtz from Forbes, Kruglick supports policies designed to coerce people out of their cars and force suburbanites into densely packed cities through the federal program called Sustainable Communities Initiative. Oh, they've changed the name. Isn't that special? Citizens are expected to surrender state autonomy over education willingly. Support for redistribution of assets has been in the planning stages for a long time. When Benjamin Bloom recommended behavioral modification teaching approaches to transform education, his goals included creating a citizenry that would accept a world economy. Regional equity advocates have the same goal. The 1975 educational goals of the Aspen Institute are coming to fruition in a new civic literacy, American education, and global interdependence. Yeah, this is all UN. The Institute defines global interdependence as Americans giving up the dream of the little white houses on its own quarter acre of land in suburbia and the permanent loss of personal mobility at will through enforced dependence on public transportation. Gee, doesn't that sound kind of like what they're talking about in those articles in my local paper? Oh, it does to me. Schools curricula began adopting academic standards that promoted these values by providing the progressive definition of global warming, energy conservation, land use conservation, and population control. Well, hello, Bill Gates and Maurice Strong. Oh, my God. To celebrate the courage of the authors who survived the protest over their smart planning and equity taxation policies, Making Equity Planning Work was written in 1990, 2 years before the Rio Summit. How about that? The authors say that they accomplished impressive equity objectives in Cleveland, Ohio, that changed property laws in the state. It's coming to a town near you. Again, these progressives ignore facts. According to the Census Bureau's 2011 American Community Survey, Cleveland's poverty rate is 34.2%, which is triple the 11.6% rate for the rest of the city. Planning records show that the population has declined as an increasing number of Cleveland's population moved to the suburbs. This result of redistribution policies is opposite of what the regional equity planners intended. Good. I hope they're frustrated. Educational experts promised that implementing Benjamin Bloom's educational goals would result in superior academic achievement. Again, the results were the opposite from what the educational experts intended. Destruction of a once successful educational system initiated the study, A Nation at Risk. The findings concluded that a foreign government that perpetrated such destruction upon our educational system would have been condemned for committing an act of war. Yep, that's what they're doing. Planning commissions will use government guidelines to justify raising property taxes to encourage country folk to become city dwellers. Soon, those recommendations will become requirements for further federal aid, and it's happening in California left and right. The promise of federal dollars is being used to implement Common Core standards and other educational initiatives upon unwilling states and local school districts. The federal government has taken a huge tax bite from citizens to develop programs which destroy the freedoms of ordinary people. Educational policies are undermining state autonomy in education. State statutes governing local controls of schools and state laws protecting parental rights to make educational decisions for their children. Regional equity taxation will eliminate parents' ability to finance educational options for their kids. If parents successfully use their power and authority to eliminate Common Core, the ripple effect could be expected regarding other local regional equity policies. If citizens allow the federal government to use federal funding to force acceptance of failed educational policies, the federal government can be expected to accelerate implementation of regional equity taxation. And that is how that goes. And it is absolutely insane. We have guests, and Holger, thanks for joining us, and Doc and Cal, I'm so glad you guys are all here. Heron, everybody, guests. No, I didn't, but I'm sure it is. I'm absolutely sure it is. That's probably what he's talking about. CeCe is now hiding in a homeschooling program via free homeschooling agenda to follow at home, sign up for free. Yeah, I've got to talk to my niece about that because she just started homeschooling her kids and pulled them out of public education. But I have a feeling that all is not right with this. And I want to tell you guys, while we're here on that subject, and I definitely want people to call in because I want to talk about this whole situation. Here's the deal. If you want to help stop Common Core, there's a website to go to. It's FreedomWorks. God, I think it's freedomworksforme.com or freedomworks.com. And you can find, or just Google FreedomWorks Common Core Stop, you know, and you'll get it. So, yeah, I don't know. I have no idea how this is going because I haven't asked the website. I haven't talked to my niece about exactly what she's got for curriculum or anything. I'll get to that later. So I don't know what you guys thought of the article, but in all my articles I was reading today, this is what's going on. Yeah, Common Core is worse than that bill. It's not just lacking common sense. It's lacking, as we know, the rights to property, privacy, raising your kids the way you should. I mean, what's happening in this country is horrible. So go to freedomworks.com to see about stopping Common Core. They've got a whole section on that, and that will help you guys. If you have children or if you have grandchildren, just get in it. Or if you don't have kids and you want to stop this stuff, just go for it. And I want to welcome all my guests. I don't know what happened to my promotional thing. I did not get an email. I usually get an email from Blog Talk, and I didn't get one today. So that was kind of strange. Of course, my computer is not doing the best. But Doc says, I've tried to figure the math in CC Common Core. It's mind-boggling. Well, it's meant to be. It's the old 2 plus 2 equals 5 is what it is. I got news for you. I'm about done with these people. It's and then I was the other thing I had to talk about before I asked you guys to call, and you guys can call in anytime. 646-378-0321. 646-378-0321. The candidates. Oh, we had the actual gubernatorial primary was the main thing that was going on, and we had Tim Donnelly, who I voted for, and all of our Tea Party candidates wanted to go up against Jerry Brown. And Tim Donnelly was already a California Republican assemblyman in the state. So we love Tim Donnelly. He makes sense. And then we got on TV this guy called Neil Kashkari. What a schmendrick. But he won because he had all the money. And he's calling himself a Republican. Republican, my derriere. He is no more a Republican than, Barry. But it's just horrible what's going on. So when we vote in November, there's going to be two people on the ballot, and one's going to be a Democrat, which is Jerry Mussolini Brown, and then there's going to be Neil Communist Kashkari. And I'm going to write in on the bottom. I'm going to kind of lightly scratch their names out just a little bit, and I'm going to put on the bottom 2 + 2 = 4. Because I feel like I'm living in old Soviet, you know. We pretend to vote, and they pretend to let us vote. I mean, it's nuts. I am never voting for a rhino, evil, socialist person with a fake R behind their name ever again. I won't do it. I did it with Romney. It's the last time I'll ever do it. I won't. I promise you. So 646-378-0321. I want to talk about that clown that was swapped for the five Taliban, because I need some input on that. You guys, please, I'm going to go ahead and put this in here. I try to do it. 646-378-0321. Yeah, please call 646-378-0321. I know Ron's still having problems with his voice, but he's coming back. So while I'm kind of waiting for folks, that would be great to hear from anybody, whether it's Chad or Bill or Cal, Doc, Holger, Heron. Please call. Let us know what you're thinking about all this stuff that's going on. I mean, you know, I just want to reiterate also what I was listening to yesterday with Mark Levin. He was just on fire. He said, you know, people just do not get it. They actually, because they go to the movies and they go see their TV shows and they watch their football games and their basketball games and all of these things, and they go to the mall, and they, you know, they take their kids to school, and then they go to the supermarket and whatever else, so they can go to the local swimming pool. They think they're free because of this. They are out of their minds. That's not freedom. And then Mark was saying, he said, yeah, he says, you'll see how free you are if you try to open up a small business anywhere, and you're dealing with the EPA, or you're dealing with the regulations, or you're dealing with all of it. It's absolutely, it's horrible. And he has called this takeover a coup. I wish he could have had at the same time on his phone line, and I wish I could get him on mine, David Horowitz, because if anyone knows a red when he sees one, it's David, because he used to be one. And I'm telling you, when he was on Hannity the last time, Horowitz, oh, he was saying everything I've said, Mikey B said, Bill said, Ron said about Barry. Oh, man. In spades, and he just rattles it off. He doesn't let anyone talk over him either, and he gets it. He knows exactly who this guy is and where he came from, because the similarities of how David Horowitz was raised by communists, and how he was kind of gone into the left, you know, his whole life, until he awoke when his friend got killed by the murdered by the Black Panthers, and he saw what was going on, and then of course he found out naturally what was going on overseas with good old Stalin and how sweet he was to his people. Yeah. So, and then what they call seeing the light and turning a corner would be, they call it having second thoughts, because, you know, there's, I'm going to go ahead and bring this person in. That's 407. Hello, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi there. Our founding fathers realized one thing, that the government governs the least, governs the best, and that's
right.
Why they set, you know, they set up the Bill of Rights, and they, you know, and they hoped that we would, you know, stay on that route of less government. And if, you know, through the 1800s, there was very little government. But today we have huge, massive government. And the Republican Party has worked to it just as much as the Democratic Party. They're just as much to blame as
they're guilty. They're very guilty, yes. I agree with you. They just do it slower. And they hide their you know, they don't come out.
Right,
and
they act like they're not doing it, but they're actually behind there holding them and pushing up the Democrats and saying, no, we're not like them, but they're pushing them up still at the same time. The amount, even under Reagan, who everybody thinks so great, we had the first amnesty program that led us to where we're at right now.
Well, I got news for you. There's a couple guys that are not in my chat room today, but they would also agree with you. They're not fans of Reagan, let me tell you.
No, I'm no fan of Reagan. I'm not a fan of any of our presidents. And basically, I come from the anti-federalist position. And the first two parties were the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists.
Right.
Although
exactly.
They weren't really recognized parties. But, it's like Jefferson called the presidency the executive branch monocrats. He didn't really like the executive branch.
Oh, yeah,
I
know.
And when he became president, he did things illegally himself with the Louisiana Purchase, which was a great purchase, but he did it, it's sort of like Obama's doing what he's doing now. And Jefferson didn't want anything remembered about his presidency because he realized his presidency was wrong. And really, the creature from Philadelphia, which is sort of like the Federal Reserve, end of it.
Sure.
It should have never probably been created. The Anti-Federalists wanted to stick to the Articles of Confederation. So our real battle today for the real conservatives is we want states' rights and local rights and shut down the creature in D.C. now. It was in Philadelphia, but it moved on to D.C.
Well, I do have that book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which gives the history of the Federal Reserve and who did it and when and what year and why
right,
and how
right.
and how they thought. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It took me a long time to read it, but I love the book because it explains so
book.
Much.
And what I'm explaining is The Creature from Philadelphia, which was these three branches of government,
right.
moved on to D.C., and we were fighting them. The Anti-Federalists never wanted The Creature from Philadelphia created. And this is way before the Federal Reserve because, they thought that it would get out of control. And for 100 years, it really didn't. And even people like Madison, who was a Federalist, and actually battled Patrick Henry during the ratification debate.
Huh.
And by the early, and they kind of went against each other, but then Jefferson came there and brought Madison along. Madison was, by 1793, was more of an anti-Federalist than Patrick Henry. Started warming up to federalism. And in the first beginning years, the government wasn't that big. So, they kind of flip-flopped their positions in a way. It was kind of funny. But, it's like the good part of the anti-federalists was the Bill of Rights. Because, without the Bill of Rights, George Mason said he'd sooner chop off his right hand than sign this Constitution that creates this executive branch and this judicial branch. And because that's our problem today, all these government officials. We need power to the people, and power to the people comes. The Bill of Rights is our freedom.
Yeah, you know what I call it? I don't know your first name. My name's Linda. So, unless you don't want to give your full name, Ed.
No, my name's Ed. I'm anti-federalist Ed. I love the anti-federalist. I studied their position, although it was not really a particular position. I mean, it was a name given to them from the Federalists right when after the ratification debates, because there was opposition, especially when, at the debate, they tried to get everybody unanimously signed to the Constitution, and Mason said that statement, he'd sooner chop off his right hand. And that's when the Anti-Federalist movement made their big move. And, of course, the Federalists gave them the anti-name. And we're still using the anti-name today. But basically, when it comes down to it, the same battle is going on. Do we want state, local rights? Do we want decentralized government? Or do we want this giant bureaucratic beast government that we've got in D.C.? And, it's like they're selling us that product. The media is selling us that product.
Oh, the media is – those people – I don't think they have two brain cells to rub together, or two points of IQ. I don't.
But the people behind them do. But the people behind them do. The people who run the Federal Reserve, the people who run the IRS, the people who run the alphabet government that we are fighting. The true conservatives want to bring it back to local government. And so it goes back to the same
states' rights.
It's just like Hamilton wanted a centralized banking system.
I know. And Jefferson did not.
Going to meetings with them. Jefferson,
I know.
He got headaches. He says, I got to see this, you know, and he hated
right.
it.
No,
so
I get it.
The
Look,
whole.
Okay, there was, I know that you also mentioned Madison, and he was a very big proponent of personal property rights, individual property rights.
Right.
If you can Google that one too. And I know Jefferson was probably more to my liking of all of them, because he hated central banks and he understood the separation of powers and that the Supreme Court was not the end all be all. He understood the Ninth and Tenth Amendment and states' rights. I mean, that's what the premise was founded on, or we were told that these were individual sovereign states and they just happened to be united. That's what we were sold. So, but that's why they had to ratify that Bill of Rights in 1791, because there were several who were not going to go along with this mess and probably would have seceded had they not done it, because they were not happy.
That was a foregone conclusion during the ratification debates, especially in Massachusetts and in Virginia, that, hey, we are going to do this. And even Jefferson, who was in France at the time, the Constitution, Madison wrote him and says, you know, Madison wasn't really like, you know, he didn't see the need for it, but Jefferson said, a Bill of Rights are what the people are entitled to against every government on earth, and which no just government shall deny. And we're the only ones that got a true Bill of Rights to get you, number one, freedom of conscience,
right.
Number two, the right to protect and bear and protect that freedom of conscience.
Sure.
So, you know, those two things.
And isn't it funny that I think they had originally 12 of them and they only ratified the 10? And it's providential that there's 10, because I call those our God-given 10 commandments inside that Constitution. Inside that,
to
me, they're written
in
stone, baby.
Yeah, they are. The triumph of American liberty is the gospel of Christ, the 10 commandments, and the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights, actually, there was more than 12. There was over actually 100 that was put out there.
Oh my gosh.
It was narrowed down to 12, and 12 was presented, then it was narrowed down to 10.
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool that we have the same number that God gave that that they put in there.
Yeah, it is. But these guys were fairly, you know, inspired by God. Most of them were very religious.
Oh, my gosh.
And,
they were,
you know,
that's how they learned how to read. Their parents taught them from the Bible.
They all had Bibles. You know, they grew up with the Bibles. They loved the Bibles.
That's
the Bibles
how they learned to read at the age of 4, yes. And that's
they were definitely reading it. In fact, Jefferson, the only book that Jefferson printed and wrote in his life, and he wrote, you know, there's volumes of letters and everything else he wrote, and Declaration of Independence and everything else he wrote, was the Jefferson Bible. Jefferson, as a deist, probably our only non-professing Christian president, he wrote the Jefferson Bible because he took out all the miracles, and he believed that Christ was the most moral man that ever lived, but he had a hard time accepting his divinity.
I think later he did because when he got older, because when he used to sign all of his documents and letters, he used to say, in the year of our Lord. And then later in life, he said, in the year of our Lord Christ. And that's how he started doing things later.
So, you know, he might have started accepting him a little towards the end. And not that he was really against him. Like I said, he wrote the Jefferson Bible. And he also said specifically that Christianity is the most conducive religion to liberty. So he understood how important Christianity was for liberty.
Right.
Because if we lose Christianity, liberty is gone. But fortunately, Christianity lives beyond any country. Even if the United States would fall, there's still Christians out there. And the Christianity is stronger and a deeper faith than the United States of America.
He's coming back. So anyway, here's the thing I was going to ask you. This guy, Bo Bergdahl, what have you heard, and what do you think about this clown, and what do you think of our sick president who's, I can't even, I mean, what does he have to do on TV to get impeached? I don't know. What does he have, screw something? I mean, I don't know.
You've got to realize that, you know, he got Chris Matthews behind his back, and all the other media guys out there, and you know, I mean, they're sort of, you know, they're going to prop him up. They're not going to. They got his back. I mean, we have a conservative movement. I don't know if going after Obama is even worth the time. I would rather go after educating civil rights, getting people out there. I mean, going after Obama now with 2 years left and all this other crap, he's done more worse things than this thing. This is why, I mean, Benghazi was worse, Fast and Furious was worse.
And the other one, Extortion 17,
The IRS, you know, sending them out on all the people that are trying to expound upon liberty. We need to expound upon liberty. We need to take it to the streets. I mean, Egyptian made their change. The Libyans made their change. America got to wake up, and we got to go back to the streets again. The street activists is what really brings our liberty about. I mean,
Here's what I think is going to happen. I think whether we want it or not, it's going to come down to Revolution Part 2. I don't think we're going to get through this without one because of the way things are going. It's a mess. And actually, I'm watching the stuff in the chat room. They're talking about this, I think he's a traitor and a deserter, probably guilty of at least sedition. God knows what else.
That is such a minor problem compared to the bigger problems we need to get back, because they're not going to take Obama out. We need to forget about Obama now, because he's already out there. Yeah. He's a lame duck.
We need to focus on
the next elections. We need to get people out in the streets.
I know. Like I said, I don't think we're going to get through this without some kind of a civil unrest, but... when I go to sleep at night, as far as a vomit goes, I have visions of lampposts and piano wire, kind of what they did in Italy way back when to Mussolini.
Yeah.
That would make me happy. Because that's exactly what it deserves.
I'm not so much anti-Obama as you are. I mean, I don't think I care for the executive branch. I don't think it should existed in the first place. But a lot of our presidents put us in here, not just him. It's a building up to Obama. What we need to do is get back to the Bill of Rights. What we need to do is focus on what's going on, because the Federal Reserve, they already got their plans. And I think that by 2016, when we see a new president, and it might be Republican, it might be the Democrat, whichever which one, I think we are, the last depression we got out through World War II. I think we're going to see a major war. And that's going to change the whole economic structure of the United States. You're looking at one thing. I see a war coming.
Even if there is a war, it's not going to change anything because of this Keynesian socialistic redistribution nonsense,
but it's going to get everybody employed, and it's going to send tons of people overseas. So it's going to, fall into that's how they got us out of the first one. And that's what they're going to use to get us out of the second one.
What they did was, as far as I can gather, and when I had asked that question of someone who's not here, and his name's Ron from Georgia, I said, okay, when World War II hit, we were caught with our pants down. We had to do this war machine. We had to build all this stuff. Everybody had to go to work. We had to fight this thing. And I said, where did all this money spring from? He says, they printed it. I said, oh, great. So if that's the cycle that's going to keep continuing, and if history's going to repeat itself, there's not going to be any changes. It's not going to. It might be temporary, but it sure as hell isn't going to be any Roaring Twenties situation. It's the whole thing is ridiculous. You're right. We've got to have states' rights. We've got to eliminate the alphabet soup garbage. For me, if I was in charge, honey, there would be the biggest document shredder on the planet Earth, and that would be the first thing to go would be the EPA and TSA and everybody else. There would be no money for any of this crap. Not 1 cent would go to this crap anymore. Not one. Zero.
Here, the Libertarian Party member here, Wiley, that I support in Florida, he's running on the platform of the fact that if he becomes elected governor, he will allow gold and silver for legal tender for the use in the state of Florida.
Wow.
So now we're standing up to the creature from Philadelphia. Now we're saying, let's move back to free market banking, and you can pay your bills this way. So it's a stand-up, not a federal, but it would be something to see for the whole country. And he's a Libertarian candidate, believe it's Scott.
Chris,
they're both the same. I mean, Chris and Scott and Jeb Bush, well, the guys we had here, they're just as bad as Brownie out there. But it is what it is. But at least he's trying to say, we need to move to local banking again, look at our localities, and bring the power back home.
Here's the thing. along with the uprising that we're going to have, or revolution part two, or civil unrest, there's going to be, I believe, a financial collapse of the dollar before the war starts. You know, this is what my guess is. Regardless, when you talk about gold and silver and barter and living off the grid and surviving wherever you can, that's going to be something that patriots like you and me and others have already planned on doing, because that's going to be a necessity. Because that dollar, you might as well put it on a roll and use it for TP, because that's what it's going to be worth. I mean, anytime you've got food, ammo, seeds, rare seeds, non-hybrid seeds, all that stuff, you got your own canning going on, you got everything going on, you know, that's going to be worth more than anything you got. I mean, anything else you want to use as a medium of exchange, if that makes sense. So
it does make sense. I believe in trading amongst ourselves, going around the Federal Reserve, going around the IRS,
yep,
hooking up with different communities and different things that you can, your different local political groups, you know, and form your own things and staying in touch that way is a very beautiful thing to do. But I think you're wrong on the fact that I don't think the dollar's going to collapse before we get into war. I think we're going to go into war because I think the people that are controlling the economic system aren't as blind as you think they are. They know what's coming on, too. They listen to everything. They listen to what we say. Well, they listen to every aspect.
They
got the satellites up there.
Sure.
I think they're going to pull us into war and employ America like it's never been employed before, because they're going to send tons of our young daughters and sons out there to war.
Right.
We've got a war coming.
Yeah, the other side of the coin is, if these globalists like you're talking about and the ones who are literally pulling the strings, they probably don't give a rat's behind what happens to any economy or any world economy or on the world stage. They've got theirs. All they're doing is playing a chess game, and I get that. So
right.
They
do care because they want to control it. They want to.
Well,
power.
The control aspect.
They use this chess piece, and if they don't want the dollar to collapse totally, they got a good working force here. They just want to employ it on the world scene, so they're going to just like move that chess piece to the Middle East or to Russia or Ukraine or wherever they might, you know, the next big major battleground is as things move on, and we're going to be employed into that aspect. And once we are employed into the aspect of a giant war again, not World War II, but World War III, and it's almost the same type of repression, that then America will be gamefully employed, because now we're going to take lots of Americans and ship them over there, and we're going to need lots of other Americans to produce all kind of goods and services.
First of all, thank you so much for calling in, Ed. And
no problem.
I've only got a couple minutes left, so I'm going to play
some
music.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I'll call again sometime. Nice talking to you.
Absolutely.
Hang in there.
Thank you.
Keep the fight.
You too. God bless. I'm going to play some music, and I want to thank Bill, Cal, Doc, Ed, Holger, and Heron for coming in. And be sure to join either me or Bill or somebody. Terry's not going to be on tomorrow. She has some things going on. I will talk to Bill on Facebook or somewhere and find out about that. Be blessed. Hope Ron gets better. And I'm going to play a little music. You guys be blessed. It was great having you here. Just thank you so much, Heron. I appreciate that. I'm going to get this music on, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, guys. Have a great one. See you tomorrow. God bless.